Ravolution Rosie.
Ravolution. Oh, and hey, guess what?
What?
We got a Twitter.
We got a Twitter!
We got a Twitter, y'all. I don't exactly know how to use it still, so bear with me. But, so y'all, if you want to find us on the Twit, we are under Revolution Rosies is our username, but if you're looking for our Twitter handle, that was too long.
So really?
Yeah. So it's at Revolution Rosies, so R-E-V-O-L-U-T-I-O-N. Rosies, though, is spelled R-O-S-Y-S.
All right, then.
R-O-S-Y-S. Yes.
Got it. So, yeah, this is episode 3 of Revolution Rosies. Your host, Vivian Vega, is over there.
And then we got Miss Betty LaRue and the Cat Manchu.
Manchu.
Cat Manchu. Is that why you did it? Is that why you named it that?
No.
You don't know that song?
No, there's a song.
No, it's called Kathmandu, but...
No, I named him Manchu because it looks like he is a Fu Manchu.
Well, that is... I'm so clever then.
Yeah.
I'm so clever.
It's very clever. Very clever. but no, Manchu is my podcast kitty because he is a cuddle cat, and if I sit for more than 5 minutes at a time, he has to find a place to sit on me.
Betty dropped a glass on her foot, and so now she's sitting with ice on her foot, and Manchu is now sitting on top of the ice that is on top of her foot.
Yeah.
And that sound was Frankie. Frankenstein Rose hacking up a lung.
Thanks, Frankie. That's really good ASMR.
So, I should have told Mike to get me snacks.
You can have all the candy corn you want that's behind
you. Oh, my God. Okay, so listen. The person I'm doing would celebrate this exact way, and I'm going to eat this candy corn.
Make fire?
It's a Halloween episode.
It is our Halloween episode. You're eating candy corn.
We did this on purpose.
We totally did this on purpose.
This is
planned. We planned stuff out.
Absolutely. You know, it wasn't planned, though, was the alcohol consumption this evening. We're out of ice, so no margaritas.
Yeah,
we're out of wine.
We didn't have any wine. I can't believe we don't have any wine in this house. That's, like,
this is, like,
crazy.
The first time I've ever been to your house without.
So, yeah, this is going to be coming out first week or the first Sunday of October. So we decided that we're going to do kind of a sci-fi theme. Now, my sci-fi theme is a little bit of a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But yours is pretty on the nose.
It's so that's kind of fun. We even each other out.
We do. We absolutely do. Mm-hmm. And it's really funny to me because I feel like the people that we pick is often a reflection of who we are.
100%.
Absolutely. So with that said, we also chose pretty famous women.
So famous that like last episode, I had all the information I could get.
Yeah.
That was all I could get.
Oh, yeah.
What I said. But this person, her life was so public, and yours too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That it was almost impossible.
To figure out what to put in, like, a little bit of space.
I have, like, 3 pages of notes, and this is
I have
just,
a timeline.
You do?
I did a timeline, because I was like, I don't even know how to do this.
I probably should have done a timeline, but I feel like... Again, the person that I'm doing would appreciate a non-timeline.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yours, but however, would definitely
totally be timeline. But no, it was really important to do the timeline on this person because so many important milestones happened. Anyways, I'm going to go ahead and get started with this month's Revolution Rosie. I am doing Lucille Desiree Ball.
Her middle name's Desiree?
Mm-hmm. Lucille Ball, the famous actress, and
what was she in again?
Fellow redhead from a box. So Lucille Ball was born on August 6, 1911.
Whoa!
Yeah, yeah. To Henry Durrell and Desiree Dee Dee Evelyn Ball.
There's your name.
I didn't know that Dee Dee was short for Desiree, so that's pretty cute.
I think it's short for anything that
starts with a
D.
Probably. When her mother was pregnant with her baby brother, her father died, and they moved in with their grandparents in Celeron, New York, which was a summer resort village on, I should have looked up how to pronounce this, and I'm pretty sure I did when I first did these new notes, Chautauqua?
No, I have no idea. I'm going to eat this candy corn and throw
it on a lake. And it was the best amusement park at that time. Lucille had said that the only thing that she remembers from the day her father died was that a bird had got loose in their house. And that's actually been cited. She had ornithophobia.
Fear of birds?
Fear of birds, yes. And, yeah, so the day her father died, a bird got loose in their house. And it created a fear of birds in her. So her mother remarried in 1918.
How did her dad die?
You know, I didn't see how he
died.
Was
it the bird?
It was the bird.
Avian flu?
Right. The very beginning of avian flu. I didn't see how her father died.
Matter.
It didn't really say
Side
much about
story.
It.
Side story. It doesn't matter.
So her mother remarried in 1918, and her Puritan Swedish step-grandparents moved into the home and removed all of the mirrors except their bathroom mirror. Yeah.
Why?
Because they were Puritan. So when
what
she
does
was
that
young,
mean? Does that mean you just...
You're real dicks? I mean, because that's what it sounds like.
I wonder if it's
a
like
vanity
you,
thing.
Yeah,
you're not allowed
same.
To be. So when,
okay.
when, yeah, exactly. When young Lucille was caught admiring herself in the bathroom mirror, she was punished severely for being vain. So they moved some real dicks into the house. At 12 years old, Lucy's encouraged by a grandfather to audition for his Shriners organization's next show.
This wasn't
as a part
the
of
Puritan
the,
one, right?
No, this is her, like, actual
the,
grandfather.
The good one.
The good one, yeah. And she made it as part of the chorus line. But in 1927, her family lost everything. Home, furnishings, everything. Due to a settlement when a neighbor boy was shot and paralyzed by a girl at her brother Fred's birthday party doing target practice under the supervision of her grandfather.
Casey Ward, if you are listening, this is probably the story that you always get confused for. Her and her aunt killing a hooker.
Yeah, that might be it. Because I did not find anywhere in all of my research of Lucille Ball that her and her aunt killed a hooker. I'm pretty sure that when I was researching her, it might have come up once or twice.
Really?
If it happened.
Oh,
but it
yeah.
didn't.
Yeah.
But a little boy did get paralyzed because her grandfather was showing a little girl at a birthday party how to shoot a gun.
And this, you guys, is why gun safety
gun
is
safety.
A very real thing.
Yeah. So they, like, lost everything and had to move out of this house that they loved, which is really sad.
My.
But, yeah. And then when she was 14 years old, she started dating 21-year-old Johnny DeVita. And her mother did not approve. I wonder why.
Why
he was
would that be?
21 and she was 14. That's disgusting. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Like, ugh.
Mm-hmm.
After a year, the couple had been together. Her mother sent her to John Murray Anderson School of Arts to kind of get her away from this guy. She was like, okay, you guys have been together a year. I thought it was going to fizzle out. It's not fizzling out. I'm going to ship you off to a school. But she sent her to, like, an acting school. Where one of her classmates was Betty Davis.
Whoa!
And she was discouraged by her instructor who told her she would never be successful.
That's always... Listen, sometimes I feel
I
like...
I hope he was alive when I Love Lucy came out. So
I feel like sometimes it. Acting coaches and vocal coaches and things may tell their students that because they are dicks, but I think some might tell them that because they really do see something, but them telling them that is kind of like a...
You're going to work harder for
you.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you need to work.
I wonder that, because I hear that from everybody.
Like, everyone's
famous.
Like, they told me I sucked.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it could be. And it could be the thing that catalysts that makes them work harder.
I mean.
Because you know those people that have always been told they're good all their life never go anywhere.
No.
Unless they're Tom fucking Cruise. And everyone hates them. So she spent many years in New York as a model and a cigarette girl. And she was told by fellow badass woman and fashion designer Hattie Carnegie to dye her hair, her naturally brunette hair, blonde. Mm. So she actually started off, she's brunette, she goes to blonde, which is when you look at her early movie career,
mm-hmm.
she's a blonde mm-hmm. in most of the early movies.
Yes.
In 1933, she signed with Samuel Goldwyn as a Goldwyn girl, who Goldwyn girls were essentially like, stock performers for the background
yeah.
of stage musical numbers, and you know, so whenever
yeah.
there was like the
yeah.
big stage musical, she was one of those women.
Right.
So she was a Goldwyn girl for a lot of years, and that's kind of what brought her to LA. So she was, you know, she was a successful model, very beautiful young woman,
mm-hmm.
successful model in New York, and then she ends up with the Goldwyn girls and ends up going to LA. She actually later auditioned for the role of Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind.
That would have been so weird.
It would have been such a different movie. Such a different movie. But, of course, Vivien Leigh got the part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Winning Academy Award for... I don't know why I put all that in. But anyways, Ball signed with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. MGM in the 1940s, but never achieved major stardom. She was just one of those people that, you know, at that time they were just like...
She was in the background.
Yep, they were just buying up a bunch of people. They would buy up their... You couldn't work with anyone else, and they would give you all these crap roles, and she never really picked up steam. She was known in many Hollywood circles as the Queen of the Bees.
Oh.
Yeah. A title previously held by Fay Wray.
Fay Wray?
Yeah. So Lucille Ball had 80 movies throughout her career.
God, when I typed out mine, I thought that was impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. You beat me.
But none of these movies were anything that, like, anyone would really have heard of. She was just the Queen of the Bees. She was probably one of the hardest working women in Hollywood that you didn't know her name.
Yeah.
She was just beautiful. She was just arm candy. So in 1940, she stars in the movie Too Many Girls alongside Cuban musician Desi Arnaz.
Uh-oh.
And that's how that starts. Lucille Ball at this time was 28. Desi was 23. Get it, girl. She usually dated taller, older men. And he was already engaged to someone else, which is a theme with Desi. After filming wrapped up...
Actually, you know what? Pause that, because it's funny. We don't not pause the actual show. Sorry. No, it's funny because later on you're going to see something that you just said in mine. And I just think it's so funny how we accidentally have similarities in our stories.
Oh, of course we do. Because the people that we choose, I don't know. Like I said, I think it like reflects us.
Where we're the same person, but... Different. Totally different. Yeah. Sorry, but go on. Younger man already engaged.
Yeah. He was already engaged. But after filming wrapped up, Lucy embarked on a promotional tour, and Desi went back to performing at nightclubs with his band. During this time apart, Lucy got wind that Desi had met up with his former lover, Betty Grable.
I mean,
and she showed up at the home he shared with his mother. Berating him and calling him a Cuban son of a bitch.
Listen, okay.
I just love that she like shows up at the door. You like, Cuban
hey,
son of a bitch.
Where's your son? Oh, I'll fucking cut him.
Oh my God, I love Lucille.
Listen,
Ball so much.
He had a choice between Betty Grable and Lucille Ball.
Woo! Yeah, I know. He was.
He was a babe.
And he was super charismatic.
Yeah.
Super, super charismatic. Totally. Very talented.
Later on, a pretty darn good businessman.
Oh, my God. He was such a good businessman. But, like, yeah, back in the day, he was a philanderer. He got around. So, looking for a solution to their argument, Desi suggested they get married. And in November of 1940, 6 months after they'd first met, they eloped. So he was like, you know what? I'll stop cheating. Let's get married.
That's not usually the steps in which people take.
That doesn't typically go well that way. So Desi stays on the road while Lucille continues to pursue her acting career. And while she's getting plenty of work, she never finds a niche. Cause she was just this beautiful girl. Nobody was giving her like these juicy parts. There weren't juicy parts for, you know, women in Hollywood, especially one as beautiful as Lucy. So the separation and Desi's infidelity, is a huge struggle for the couple. Mm. Surprise, surprise. Mm. So in 1948, Ball was cast as Liz, Cooper, a wacky wife in My Favorite Husband, which is an audio program for CBS Radio.
Oh, that's back when they did the radio show.
Yeah, so that's, My Favorite Husband is actually what gets her offered I Love Lucy.
Mm-hmm. It was actually, like, oh, she's funny.
Well, she's funny. It's a wacky wife. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, a lot of scheming, not quite like the I Love Lucy show, where she gets a lot more, like...
intricate with her disasters.
Yeah, and she's, like, the main character.
Right.
But My Favorite Husband was, like, her jumping off point. So the show was super successful, and CBS asked her to develop it for television. So they, like, approached her and was like, we want you to do this.
Create something like this. Yeah.
And they wanted her to use the husband that was the voice actor for her husband. And she said, no, I really want to work with Desi.
I want to watch my husband because I am very concerned about where that dick has been.
She wanted to bring him in and she thought, you know, if we're working together and that sort of thing, that'll relieve a lot of our marital stress because he's a whore.
We need to fix them.
Yeah. So, but when she asked CBS, you know, I'd really love to bring Desi Arnaz into this TV show, and I want him to be my husband, CBS was like, I don't know that the American people will buy a beautiful mm-hmm. all-American woman married to a Cuban.
And Lucille's she's like, but it's real life.
She's like, well, he is my husband. but Lucy was like, hold my drink. And so to prove them wrong, the couple developed a vaudeville act.
Yes.
And they took it on the road with Desi's orchestra. And the act was a hit and convinced CBS exclusives that a Ball-Arnaz pairing would be worthwhile. At the same time, rival networks NBC, ABC, and Dumont were showing interest in the Ball-Arnaz series, which actually they were also like, if you don't take us as a couple, we'll go somewhere else.
Desi Lou is way cuter than, like, Ball-Arnaz.
I didn't know you were going with that, but that's hilarious.
And no, it's also true.
It is so true. but yeah, so in preparation for the show, the couple formally paired Desi Lou, which is so funny because you said that. That's literally my next step.
It was a really good lead-in.
Yeah, it was a really great lead-in. So Desi Lou was the first ever independent television production company, and she was the first woman to head a TV production company. Desi was a very savvy entrepreneur. He convinced CBS to produce the show on film, which they had not been doing.
I'm really excited to learn where you're going with this being sci-fi.
Right? I told you.
I kind of forgot that we were doing a sci-fi episode, and I was like, wait.
Wait a minute. Where does this get sci-fi at?
Because I looked down at my notes, and I was like, these don't match at all.
So I said, mine's a long, drawn-out explanation.
I love it, though. Keep going. So she's being a boss-ass bitch.
Mm-hmm. Desi convinces them to do it on film, which they hadn't been doing before. They actually, to convince the company to the production company to do it on film because it was a more expensive thing, mm-hmm. Desi and Lucy both took $1,000 a week pay decrease.
Wow.
To pay for them to do it this way because they wanted it on film so that coast to coast, it was mm-hmm. better quality for everyone, that they would have a rerun capability, which most things didn't have rerun capability because they weren't being recorded like that. It was all pretty much live. So it'd be shot live and then sent out, and the quality would be terrible once you went from like mm-hmm. New York to California or right. the other way around.
Right.
So they convinced them like, no, we want to do it. Right, and that also helped them become the first like sitcom that you could send out. Like,
oh, for sure.
Yeah,
and you know, I don't know if this is in your notes, and I'm so sorry if it is.
No, it's fine. What's up?
Did you know that they were the first TV show to like have a flushing toilet sound?
No, I did not know that. I did know, and actually, I was going to bring up that a year after they started the show, which was a complete hit, in December of 1952. They were awaiting the birth of their mm-hmm. second child. They decided to incorporate Lucy's pregnancy yes. into the show, which was...
That was the first, too, right?
Actually,
was it a first?
So in doing my research, they are credited for being the first, but there might have been one more TV show that had done it before them, but they're the first ones credited for doing it. I don't know anything about the other TV show.
Yeah.
But they decided to incorporate Lucy's pregnancy into the show, but CBS forbade them and any other cast member from referring to her as pregnant. Instead that they could only use the euphemism expecting. Because pregnant is vulgar.
That's but yeah, so that weird. Was
like one of the first, like, the first credited woman to ever be shown as pregnant on TV. And they recorded and, choreographed it, or not choreographed it, but they recorded and set it up so that when Lucy was getting her cesarean,
mm-hmm.
the show Lucy goes to the hospital.
Yes.
And the baby was born the same day the baby was born.
And it always confused me why they didn't use the real Ricky.
You know what? They used two sets of twins because of labor laws.
I mean, God, that's still happening, isn't it?
Yeah, that's still happening. They actually used two sets of twins until he was, like, five on the show.
Damn.
Which, Yeah, so it,
tell me to stop eating also, this fucking candy corn.
No, eat all the candy corn you want. It's Halloween episode. But, so yeah, on top of the whole, like, you know, her being the first pregnant lady and all of that sort of stuff, they didn't know, because they didn't have the kind of technology we have, if the baby was going to be a girl or a boy.
Mm-hmm.
So the show recorded both. Two. Yeah. But then decided not to do it that way. And Desi said, you know what? She's already given me a girl. And this could very well be another girl. So let's do a boy, because it might be my only chance to have a boy. Just kind of funny. Uh-huh. And then when she gave birth to a little boy, Desi called the production company and was like, hey, she stayed on script. So, yeah, I Love Lucy is a ginormous hit. Mm-hmm. It finally pings into a female character being funny, and she was great at physical comedy, did amazing mm-hmm. physical comedy. I love watching her work with one of my other favorite comedians of all time, Red Skelton, which he was originally a burlesque comedian.
My grandpa loved him.
Oh, I love Red Skelton. I actually made friends with one of his great grand nephews. Mm. I met somebody and their last name was Skelton, and I was like, oh, like Red Skelton? And he was like, oh, how do you know his name? I was like,
because he's a celebrity?
Like, because I like to get really drunk and force people to watch episodes of Red Skelton. Oh, I do that. but so she was a leading comedy lady. And the thing is, back in those days, if you were going to be a funny woman, you were either going to be a not attractive funny woman, or you were going to be stupid funny.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And instead of that, she was witty and charming
quick.
And funny and yeah, and quick yes. and full on physical.
Right.
So, and she was definitely a huge inspiration for people like Carol Burnett.
Oh, yes.
Who I'm actually going to bring up. There's a really sad story with Carol Burnett.
It's sad, but it's
sweet.
Sweet.
But
I knew it complete. When I wore a younger man's clothes. Thanks, Billy Joel.
Right in there. We can't get through one episode without singing songs we don't have rights to.
God damn it.
So after, in 1957, after 179 episodes, so it ran from, I forgot one of my other favorite facts about the pregnancy of Lucille Ball. So this was her second child.
I didn't know that.
It was 1952, and that means that she was 41 years old.
That's impressive, but it's also very impressive that I didn't know she had another... It was a daughter named after her, right?
Yep. Lucy and...
God, guys. Yeah. So, come on and be a little bit more creative, though, with the names.
So, anyways,
your first episode was too creative with their names.
They had fun with it.
And this one is like, how about Lucy and Ricky?
Well, he wasn't actually named Ricky. Because Ricky, yeah, it took me a hot second. I realized this today when I was reading through it. I was like, oh, my God. Her husband's name wasn't really Ricky
it
Ricardo.
Was Desi.
It's Desi.
Yeah,
so they named the child on the show Ricky Jr. after Ricky
Desi.
Ricardo.
Okay.
And so, yeah, they do all of the episodes, 179 episodes, and they finally, you know, like, say goodbye to the I Love Lucy show. But then they pick right back up in 1960 with...
Lucy.
In 1957 to 1960 with the Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz show.
Oh.
So this one's more like an hour long, and it was on a rotation. So, like, back in the day, they didn't have, like, the weekly shows.
Mm-hmm.
Shows could be bi-weekly, and they could be bi-monthly, which blows my mind.
Yeah.
Like, television shows not being on a weekly basis.
Yeah, like, TV quit, stopped. It stopped working. They would play, like, the Star Spangled Banner.
And then
like,
be done.
And then it's just... Blank,
yeah,
blank
because
space.
they didn't have reruns.
Yeah,
so you literally would have to record, and
those
if you wanted a show,
that we see were their new TV
right,
shows.
And to watch a show, to have like TV shows constantly, you could only produce so many.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it's crazy to think of it that way. In 1960, as the Desi Ball, the Lucille Ball,
Desi
Ball. It's a terrible name.
The Balnez.
Awful.
Awful.
But
awful.
The Lucille Ball, Desi Arnaz show in 1960, and they divorced.
Oh.
Which, I mean, they it's known that they loved each other till the day they died.
Yeah.
They stayed close. They were very close, active parents. They were very active grandparents. He just couldn't...
Quit the booze?
Well, and the ladies.
Isn't that what he died of? alcohol?
No. I forgot what she died of. What she died of, not her.
I was like, what, not
her? Oh, lung cancer.
Cigarettes.
The I Love Lucy show was sponsored by Philip Morris. So, and then Desi dies of lung cancer. Surprise, surprise.
Thanks for buying stock with us, Desi. You dick. Boom, we're going to take you out.
Yeah. When they divorce, Lucy takes over Desi Lou. Now, Desi had always been the brains, and she had been the art.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she handled...
She was the marketer.
She was the marketer. She handled all the talent. She did all of that. Mm-hmm. And he did all of the...
Numbers, probably.
Well, yeah, he did all the numbers. He was a very suave businessman. So when they divorce and she takes over, like, she's like, I had to go in and be the boss. Mm-hmm. And it was not anything she was used to. It's not anything, but she did a badass job. So she, in 1962, she bought out Desi, became the president of Desi Lou Productions, and the only female head of a Hollywood production company. In 1963, Desi Lou is one of the largest independent production companies in Hollywood, and of course the driving force behind Ball's star-making vehicle was I Love Lucy, but they also were responsible for the Andy Griffith Show, The Untouchables, and the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Oh, my God, the Dick Van Dyke Show.
But they had everything.
I mean, yeah, the others are good, but, like, literally you could have just said the Dick Van Dyke Show, and I would have been like, oh, love it.
Yeah, so good. So when the landmark The Untouchables ended in 1963, Desi Lou desperately needed another big hit. Herbert Solo, who was hired to find projects for the studio, brought Ball two proposals. One was Star Trek. And the other was Mission Impossible.
Oh, okay, I think I see where this is going.
Yeah.
I think I see where this is going.
So it was clear that Star Trek pilot would be expensive to film, but Ball, who actually thought that it was a series about traveling USO performers.
That's such a cute old Lucy thing,
right? Because it's Star Trek.
Yeah.
So she thinks it's about USO performers traveling around. But anyway.
Oh, my God, like an actual trek. Oh, Jesus, Lord Almighty.
Yeah, it was all so right, cute.
God.
She overruled her board of directors and got the pilot produced because it was, like, a really expensive pilot, and she was like, I'm going to have it produced anyways. Nope. So the pilot, which was titled The Cage, which I have watched when Star Trek, the original series, came on Netflix, they actually started it with the lost pilot.
This one.
Yeah, so the pilot titled The Cage flopped. People said that it was too cerebral. Like, it didn't even, you know, hit the TV.
They had no idea what that any of that meant.
Well, they were just like...
space, to have that technology.
It had no grounds. Yeah, like, nothing like it had really gone out there.
Right.
The cast was diverse, and it was depicting a world that people were like, what the hell? So the pilot immediately flops, and the studio's like, we're not going to produce this, and, you know, we're not going to have this show. We're not going to do this. Mm-hmm. And NBC pulled it an unlikely move and ordered a second pilot. So Lucy said, let's do a second pilot, and only retained Leonard Nimoy's Mr. Spock from the first pilot. Everyone else was recast, and Lucy financed the reshoot over the preference of her board of directors.
Wow.
So Lucy
pulled her rank card. She's like, no,
we're going to reproduce this pilot. She's like, this has grounds. This has legs. It can stand on its own. We need to recast. It's got a good idea. And so the whole cast, like Star Trek itself, would not be around, and you wouldn't have all the other spinoffs of it and everything else if Lucille Ball had not said, no, we're doing this. We're not going to drop this. We're gonna produce this show.
Wow.
So that's where she ties in with
sci-fi,
because she was literally responsible.
You guys, she had this planned all along.
I told you, I had to just wrap back around to get there.
She had this planned all along. I hear a door.
Okay, so Mike brought us in our wine, and it looks like we're going to be having Boda Box's Nighthawk Black Cab tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, it's bold, rich, and dark.
Just like Desi Arnaz. And I'm going to keep
eating this. Oh, yeah, eat that candy corn. I do not like candy corn.
You're broken.
Lucille Ball is the reason that Star Trek is on TV still to this day and making movies still to this day. Had the network had their way.
Lasted longer than she did.
Uh-huh. Had the network had their way, she knew a good thing, too. She knew a good thing when she saw it. And had the network had their way, Star Trek would have died before it even reached her television. So in 1967, she sells Desilu to Gulf and Western and forms her own production company, Lucille Ball Productions, because fuck Desi.
She's like, he's been gone long enough.
Yeah.
We're fine.
So in 1968, she produces her third Lucille Ball series, Here's Lucy. And that's the one that she does with Vivian Vance.
Yes.
Who, Vivian Vance. Just like a quick backstory on this whole thing. Vivian Vance was gorgeous, stunning woman.
I think I already know the story that you're going to tell.
And so Lucy, when they first tried to hire her for the show, mm-hmm. she had already had a different woman that she had worked with a ton that she had wanted for the show. But the woman had a drinking problem and the production company was like, or like the network was like, too big of a liability. We already have one drunk because
Fred.
Yeah.
Fred was a drunk.
Fred actually had it in his contract that if he showed up more than once drunk on mm-hmm. set, they'd mm-hmm. can him. And he never showed up drunk once.
Yeah.
Not even once. And he had a major drinking problem. They almost didn't hire him for it.
Yeah.
So when Lucy says, this woman that I've worked with, and I don't remember her name, and she would have been amazing in the part, and I love her, and they're like, we already got one alcoholic. We can't mix this. It's going to be too much. So they audition Vivian Vance, who's stunning and hilarious, and Desi wants to hire her on the spot. And Lucy has more reservations
she's
about it.
She's like, she's pretty, she's young.
Right?
She is too much of a competition.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Also, when you're looking at TV shows and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. It would typically be one beautiful star, and mm-hmm. that was the head star, and they had Lucy.
Right.
It would be confusing
to the audience to have too many good-looking people.
I can't believe that two beautiful women hang out together.
That's impossible.
So there was actually a bit of a discomfort and a rivalry when Vivian Vance first arrived on the set. Also, Vivian hated Fred.
Mm-hmm.
They hated each other.
Mm-hmm.
He called her a sack of potatoes.
I mean, totally.
Yeah, she's such a sack of potatoes.
Okay, Fred is literally a potato.
He is, And she's like, he was 20 years older than her, and she would make comments about how his dancing was no longer as good, because he was a vaudevillian actor.
Mm-hmm.
He was a song and dance man, which is so funny to think of watching Fred, because he does Fred amazingly.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Desi loved him so much when he read for the part. They worked around Fred's part to make him more curmudgeon-y.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't that kind. He was like an old vaudevillian song and dance guy, but he was something else, and they actually worked in it that he was curmudgeonly. So, like, that was because they wanted it to fit Fred, because Desi loved Fred so much.
Yeah.
And actually, Desi and Fred became, like, lifelong friends.
Yeah.
And Vivian Vance and Lucy become lifelong friends.
I'm sorry, real quick, because every time you say Vivian Vance, I think of Jiminy Glick, played by Martin Short. Do you know Jiminy Glick?
Yeah.
Where he has, like, the fat suit and he does interviews with celebrities.
Yeah.
Well, he was doing one with, I can't remember who it was, but he's like, have you ever worked with Viv Vance? And then he's like, no, I've never worked with Viv Vance. And he goes, Viv Vance. Viv Vance, why did I have to bring her up? And he gets, like, real emotional. And so now every time you say Vivian Vance, I'm just like, Viv Vance. Viv Vance.
Viv Vance. Yeah, and then she starred alongside of Henry Fonda in Yours, Mine, and Ours, which I love that movie. And she plays, she's like, oh God, how old was she in Yours, Mine, and Ours?
I mean, if she was 41 when she was on the Lucille, or the
Was 1952, so in 1968, she would have been like 52.
Woo!
She plays
Mine and Ours, don't they have 20 kids?
They have like a ton of kids,
yeah.
And I think at the end she like... And I just love that it was never...
At the end, she's like, JK, none are mine!
Yeah.
And then she runs away.
Is that what
I'm watching a different movie.
I think we might have been watching a different movie. but no, and she's just stunning in Yours, Mine, and Ours.
Yeah.
She still plays, like, an attractive woman, and she's in her 50s. And I just love that she spent her 20s and her 30s losing in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
She was just a B actress. And then she hits her 40s and hits her stride.
Yes.
And she spins every year until her death on top.
Yeah.
And
Wait, she died?
Wait, she's dead.
I'm just kidding. 1911, if she was still alive,
right.
I'd be like,
oh my
what
God.
The shit?
So,
also, everybody knows that she's
in 1979. Okay, so Here's Lucy gets canceled in 74, and Vivian Vance dies in 79.
Oh, shit, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Viv Vance.
Viv Vance. So she, in 1984, she's awarded the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts Lifetime Achievement Citation for acting. In 1986, her fourth TV show, Life with Lucy, premieres on ABC.
Sake.
Yeah, and she's like in her 80s and she played the grandmother, but she can't do the shtick she used to.
Yeah.
She can't do the physical comedy that she's known for, and it gets canceled after only 8 weeks.
That makes sense.
Sucks. I mean, like, also...
Listen, you can't have it all the time, Lucy.
Right. Also, I mean, like, the game has definitely changed from 1980, like, from 1952 to 1986. Like,
nobody finds that cutesy shit.
December 2nd in 1986, Desi dies of lung cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah. During their last talk before his death, Desi whispered to Lucy, "I love you too, honey. Good luck with your show."
Oh.
Like I said, They went through a ton together. They had a lot of love for each other. There was so much passion.
Some people and just don't need to be
they
married.
Were also in the limelight constantly because Desi and Lucy had to sell their marriage.
Yes.
Because it was this whole, you know, the I Love Lucy show, they had to sell their marriage.
Yes.
They were in the spotlight and
100%
all the time.
Yeah.
You know, they had to be the happy couple. But mm-hmm. there was a lot of passion between them. You got your fiery redhead and your Cuban singer. Like,
do you want to know the only real fact that I took away from when I read her biography? Her bio is so great. But there was this part where they were talking about one of their fights, one of Lucy and Ricky's fights. Ricky. Lucy and Desi. Damn it!
Do you know what happened? Like, I was reading, and it took me reading Ricky Jr. to be like,
That's not his name,
but I knew his name was Desi.
Fuck,
so
yeah.
How did it never like click with me? And I was like, Lucy gets to keep her name in the show, but they changed it to Ricky. And
because Desi's too tough for people, I bet.
It was too ethnic.
What is that, Mexican? but anyway, so
Sorry.
They were talking about how they used to fight all the time, Lucy and Desi. And they would fight outside of their home.
Oh.
And they would fight in the driveway and in the garden and blah, blah, blah. Well, they lived next door to F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Oh, God.
So him and his, like, friends would sit out on his, like, and porch and just watch them fight.
All the Arnezes are going at it again.
Like, I could just imagine them, like, drinking scotch and smoking cigars and eating, like, little tea cakes and just being like, uh-oh.
I just imagine that Lucy threw things.
She definitely looks like a thrower.
She definitely would throw stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, I 100% mm-hmm. think that they probably caught Desi... like, ducking behind the car as she's saying, you Cuban son of a bitch, you Flandering son of a bitch, like, just, like, throwing...
Oh, why don't you get another drink, Desi?
Yeah.
Yeah, she seems crazy. I love it.
Like, I love it. No, she is crazy like a fox.
Like a little orange fox. Like her little hair. Sorry.
Oh, also, and I don't know why I didn't bring this up before, when we were still in the 1940s, she was accused of being a communist.
Oh, I didn't know that. She was blacklisted
for
a little bit.
She was blacklisted.
Yes.
She had to go to court. And it was famous. Her attorney famously said, "The only thing about Lucy that's red is her hair, and not even that's real." I love that quote.
That's funny.
So anyways, March 29th of 1989, Lucy makes her last appearance on the 61st Annual Academy Awards. And then on April 26th of 1989, Lucille dies while recovering from heart surgery.
I was 2 days old.
Well, you know whose birthday is on April 26th? Carol Burnett's birthday.
Uh-huh.
Carol Burnett looked up to Lucy, obviously.
Obviously. 100%.
I mean, she was the only woman you could look up to in that sort
in
of...
The show, in
that
the show
kind business.
Of television.
I did comedy, and Carol Burnett, you know, was
right.
a comedian. And so, like, Lucy was... She idolized Lucy, and they worked together, and I believe that Lucy had even done a couple of the Carol Burnett shows, and...
Probably.
So, every year on her birthday, Lucy would send Carol Burnett flowers, and on the day that Lucy died, Carol Burnett received her final flowers from Lucy. And I was watching a documentary, I'm tearing up now, because to have, like, Carol Burnett tell it, she, like, starts to tear up and cry, because she was so important. Oh, my God. Now I'm... So beautiful, though. Like, she was so close,
that really
and
is.
She was so supportive of somebody mm-hmm. else, and, I mean, like, that's amazing, too.
That's
and
what we're here for, is to build other women up.
That was Lucille Ball. She was an American actress who spent the golden years of her life making B-movies, only to freaking win over America and the world in
forever.
And forever. That forever. It has been the most translated TV show, the most syndicated TV show.
Easily.
They colorized an episode in 2013 and did a Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Girls, you were never too old to fucking kick ass.
Yep, Mae West did it.
Mae West did it. She was in her 40s or
50s. She was 50. In her 40s in her first movie, yep.
Yeah, I mean, like, and you're never too old
Carol
to be sexy.
Carol Channing, I believe.
Go, like,
we
get a rating
really and need a sponsor. So in order to get said sponsor, we need listens. We mm-hmm. need feedback. We need ratings. We need suggestions.
Oh, I would love to hear.
And I just want things from you, like emails about women who inspire you.
I want to open up my email and cry. If you guys can do that for me, that'd be amazing.
Please make me cry, because it is hard.
It's always nice when you get, like, that good, like, warm,
you know what,
like,
does make me cry?
Women supporting women cries.
What Dreams May Come. That shit makes me cry. Give me What Dreams May Come shit.
No, that's sad.
That's
sad
really sad.
Give me at the but end of, like, a terrible rom-com and because I'm having a bad day cry.
Give me that give me cry. P.S. I Love You when he keeps sending her letters saying, go to Ireland and sing karaoke. And he knew she was going to meet that guy. Mm-hmm. They were friends and they planned this. And it was so beautiful. I'm just kidding. What the kind of cry I really am looking for is what Betty just had talking about Carol Burnett and Lucille Ball.
Oh, yeah, that's what I want. I want that kind of love.
I want love. I want uplifting. If you have somebody dead, I'm sorry, but send that too if that's inspiring, because I'm a weirdo and I like that stuff sometimes.
I like the inspiration.
So
I'm very excited about your person. I'm sitting here with bated breath just like, yes, let's talk about her because she is the queen of crazy in the
she's
best way possible.
She's the queen of crazy. She's probably the queen of sci-fi.
Oh, she is the queen of sci-fi.
I mean, she's probably, you know what I would call her?
What?
Probably a little less than a queen, maybe more like a princess. I'm doing Carrie Fisher.
Yeah! I'm really excited. I mean, I love Lucy, but I'm very excited to hear all about Carrie Fisher, especially because her life started in Scandal.
Girl, there is not even enough time to talk about her entire life. There's not enough time.
And she was such a badass.
I have 3 complete pages of bullet points right now, so I'm going to make my way through it. She was a badass. First, I'm going to start off by saying, she has a book and an audiobook and a one-woman show called Wishful Drinking. Please, for the love of everything on this planet, watch it.
Were you able to watch it? Were you able to find it and watch it?
Well, I have HBO now.
Okay, so that's on HBO?
It's on HBO now.
Okay.
I'm sure you can find it at the library.
Okay.
I watched the film, the one-woman show, first, and then I read the book. And then I listened to the audiobook because she reads the audiobook. And it was fucking phenomenal. Actually, there's more in the book than there is in the one-woman show. And it's a pretty quick read. There's like 200 pages, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But God, there's a ton of information. I was like, I can't keep all these notes. I can't keep all these notes. So I'll begin at the beginning. I will warn you.
It's a very good place to start.
Us and our songs, damn it. Listen, okay, so my notes were very erratic. And I think that I've put them in enough of an order that it's not like, what the fuck, you're just tossing facts at me.
Cohesive.
So Carrie Fisher was born October 21st, 1956, when Lucy was already pretty established. So by the time Lucille Ball was established in her television career, Carrie Fisher was born.
Aw, we, like, right in the 50s.
Yeah.
we're doing the 50s.
We're going to cover.
We're 50, 60, 70, because we're doing the women of mid-century. Yes. So.
And I'm going to say Carrie Fisher really became Carrie Fisher in the 70s. So we're solid.
Absolutely.
We're just good. Made it in there. Because it was literally at the end of the 70s.
Yeah. No, that's fine, though.
Whatever. So Carrie Fisher was born October 21st. Oh, it's her birth month.
Yay! Shit. This is going to come out on our birth month.
Man, we are hitting all of the marks.
We're really good at this podcast.
We are so good. Anyway, she was born to Hollywood darlings Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher.
Oh, Debbie Reynolds. Such a cutie pie.
During Singin' in the Rain, she was pregnant with Carrie.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that. Singing in the Rain was my little sister's favorite movie.
That makes a lot of sense.
So she watched it constantly. So I've seen Singing in the Rain at least 60 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love Singing in the Rain. It's such a good movie. And she, Debbie Reynolds, is just
a darling.
She's just a darling.
She's a
just,
Hollywood, would you call her a Hollywood darling?
She is.
And then Eddie Fisher was kind of smarmy. But
smarmy.
Kind of smarmy. But he was like a crooner. So, her brother Todd was then born less than 2 years after, she was born. And then Eddie and Debbie, woo! Their names are too similar and I don't enjoy it. Eddie and Debbie divorced a year after Todd was born.
Yeah, because.
Thus making Carrie 3 years old. Yeah, he was fucking everything.
Well, no, he left her for her best friend.
Her best friend. You want to know more about this? I'll tell you.
Yeah.
So Todd was named after Mike Todd, who was married to Elizabeth Taylor. Elizabeth Taylor had Debbie Reynolds as her maid of honor. Mike Todd had Eddie Fisher as his best man.
Has this movie been done yet? Because I feel like it needs to be.
Wishful Drinking was. So then Mike Todd gets in an accident, dies. And Eddie's like, oh, I got to go over and comfort my best friend's wife,
And by comfort, Elizabeth Taylor. He means stick it to her.
And, yeah, and then there they were, divorced after less than a year of fucking around.
Yeah. And
so Carrie was 3 years old at the time of the divorce. Drama! She actually, in the book, I don't want to give too much away, but in the book and in the...
I mean, this is a podcast about her life, so you might...
I can.
can give everything away.
So she does a whole chart, because one day her daughter, who you'll learn about later, comes in and is like, hey, I've been seeing this guy. And Carrie's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait, let me get the chart out. Because she had to make sure that, because she's related to everybody in fucking Hollywood at this point.
Because of.
So she's like, listen.
She's Hollywood royalty. Like, literally.
She didn't have a choice.
No.
She didn't want to be that person. But she's like, well, you could be related. Let me get this out. Let me get the chart out.
Sounds like my hometown.
Mine too.
My mom used to ask me the last name of everyone I dated to make sure that we weren't
related. Just making sure. Just making sure. But, yeah, so she got out this whole, like, chart. And you can see it when you're watching Wishful Drinking. She has, like, a whole chart she pulls down. And she's like, okay, so here I am up here. And she, like, points to it. It's so great.
I love it.
It's so great.
Oh, I love it.
So growing up, she sang in choruses with her mother, Debbie, starting at a very, very young age. She eventually dropped out of high school completely at the age of 16. So she's like, I'm fucking touring around. I don't have a normal life anyways.
Yeah.
I'm getting out of this. I'm blowing up the popsicle. What's the blowing the popsicle stand?
Yeah. I mean, and it was the 60s, too, so I feel like.
Blowing the popsicle stand. This was actually the 70s.
Was that the 70s?
She was born in 56, so she was in the early 70s. Soon following her dropout, however, she applied and got accepted to London's Central School of Speech and Drama. Though she didn't really want to be an actress, she just kind of wanted to leave home. She's like, eh. My mom's a little crazy. I love my mom and her mom.
Best friends.
But
so cute.
God, the way she talks about her mom in the book, fucking hilarious.
Well,
hilarious.
when you're close to your mother like that, but you, I mean, like, you're definitely like, oh, I know who I am.
Yes.
And I know who I am is based on who my mother was. Yes. Like, oh,
so one part from the book, though, and it's actually about her brother, but at one point she talks about how her brother found God. And she was like, I guess it's one way to speak to a father figure. Because they're dead.
I mean, like, and I think there was so much hate when the whole, like, when he left Debbie.
It was such drama.
She talks about it a lot where she's like, yeah, when my mother would, you know, talk to us kids about that hate. But also, not just that, though, there was such drama when they split and everyone was in their business that.
Similar to the Lucille Ball thing.
These kids had to deal with.
It was
constant coverage. Constant coverage.
I mean, Debbie Reynolds at that time was the peak.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was like, how could you leave the cutest woman, America's sweetheart, for
Elizabeth Taylor?
Mm-hmm.
Carrie went to the school to get away from home because though she loved her mother, she was being driven insane.
Well, she was also...
And she was a teenager.
A teenager, yeah. And when you're just like your mother, and you're at home as a teenager,
and
you're going to scream at her.
And you're being watched constantly... You want to go away. Mm-hmm. You want to go away.
No, it makes perfect sense. So, to be fair, a teenager in Hollywood where your family is
very
Hollywood
known.
Royalty.
Very known.
Yeah. No.
Super known.
You need to go away.
Not only is your parents known, but they slept with other people's parents who are also very known.
Yeah.
Thanks, parents.
We're being human beings and doing weird things.
Her mom married, like, some old guy. So, while she was in school in London, she was accepted to Sarah Lawrence College. She dropped out of that, too. That's three schools that she's dropped out of. But when she was still in school, however, when she was in England, she was cast as a flirtatious daughter in the movie Shampoo in 1975 when she was just 19 years old. Warren Beatty?
Was that her co-star?
I believe so. Let me look it up
here. Who also dated Madonna?
No. Really? Warren Beatty?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess so. And Dick Tracy?
Yeah. Warren Beatty and Madonna. She loved it because he was old Hollywood.
Yep. Okay. So, yeah, it was Warren Beatty, and he was kind of a babe in the movie. Okay. So, like, she was a young daughter of Boopy Boopy Dee Dee Doo. What is that person's name? What is that person's name?
That.
I can't remember. Okay. So, Goldie Hawn was also in the movie, and I can't really remember exactly.
Oh, I love me some Goldie Hawn.
Me too. She's hilarious. Big guess everything 60s in the world. But look at him in this movie. He was kind of a babe.
I mean, Warren Beatty was definitely kind of a babe.
So her role in Shampoo as a 18 or 19-year-old girl.
Let's talk about all of the hair in this movie. And that ruffled, so unbuttoned
It's like an extension
shirt.
Of the hair.
Oh my gosh, it's
so
like a shirt.
He was a hairdresser in the movie.
Oh, that makes sense.
Which is why it's called Shampoo. So he was a hairdresser and was doing the mom's hair over at the house. And it is implied, though it wasn't shown, that Carrie seduces Warren Beatty.
Oh, I mean, how could you not? Look at this ruffled shirt.
Oh, it gets better. It gets super better.
Okay, I want to watch this movie.
It's not very awesome. Even she says, eh.
It sounds like a terrible movie. I kind of want to watch it.
That's right up your alley, actually. Okay, so also, she did something else pretty major when she was 19. She auditioned in a room with two directors sitting at a table, okay? One was directing a horror movie, one was directing a sci-fi movie. And she's like, okay, this is weird. I don't even want to be an actress.
Yeah, I just ended up here.
She actually did want the horror movie role, though. You want to know why?
Why?
Always the fucking hilarity, this one, okay? So the horror movie they were casting was Stephen King's Carrie. Okay. So
she was auditioning for Carrie.
She wanted to be Carrie Fisher as Carrie.
I love
in
it.
Carrie.
I love every okay,
love
I'm
every
kinda
second
sad
of it.
That she didn't end up with Carrie. I mean the person
it's,
that they got for Carrie was beautiful and perfect.
Yes.
And I loved it.
Sissy Spacek.
Sissy Spacek, that's it. That's
she's
it.
In Castle Rock. But no, she wanted to say that she direct quote, I'm Carrie playing the role of Carrie in the film Carrie. She thought that was hilarious.
I like it.
She obviously didn't get that role.
Obviously.
You know what she did get, though?
The sci-fi role?
Yes. So she got cast as Leia, Princess of Alderaan, in a sci-fi film called Star Wars.
I just imagine, like, she's reading the script, like...
She thought it was shit.
Yeah.
She thought it was shit.
If you read the Star Wars script...
With no background.
It is shit. It's actually not a good script.
To be fair, she didn't know what she was auditioning for until after.
Oh.
She knew one was horror, one was sci-fi. She was just doing a monologue.
She just did like a
she wasn't reading
monologue.
From the script.
Okay, so
she was just doing a monologue. In front of two directors at the exact same time for two completely different movies.
Oh,
yeah.
Young Carrie Fisher. She was so pure.
She was. And actually, that's the next thing that I'm going to talk about. So, she wrote a book during this time. She wrote a diary at this time. She was a very avid writer. Always, always had a diary. Mm. From a very young age until the day she died. Diary.
That's a promise I've made to myself a million times that I've never kept.
She fucking kept it. She wrote poems. They were beautiful poems. Aww. She wrote what will eventually become The Princess Diarist. So, she compiles all of her works and puts them into a book, which I read. And it was fucking phenomenal. So, Star Wars.
Yeah.
In The Princess Diarist, she tells about the time on the set and how crazy it all was. She talks about her brief affair with a married man, Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Who, oh my God,
Yeah.
I mean,
like Star Wars Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones Harrison Ford.
That whole time period is pretty solid timing.
God.
Oh, he's another one who got a late start. He was in his 30s.
Yeah.
And he was, okay, so he was in his 30s. She was 19.
Oh, God. Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Okay, but listen.
Oh, God, oh, no.
My husband is 15 years older than me.
Yeah, but you met him when you were in, like, your early 20s.
Early 20s, 19 is basically the exact
same
thing.
No, it's not.
What?
No, it's not.
When you are her and you grow up in the way that you
did. Okay, that's a little bit different. You're right, it's a little bit different. But, like, 19 to 24.
She already had an affair with Warren Beatty on a film. Not an actual affair, but a suggested one.
But, no, I guess in, like, the 70s it's different. Just, like, 14-year-old Lucille Ball going out with a 31-year-old.
That is way bad.
That is disgusting. But in that time frame...
This is totally fine.
Oh, I've been watching a lot of things that have made me really disgusted about being a 14-year-old. And
I am not going to lie to you. If I was...
Like the last, my 19 favorite writer, actually.
Me, if I was 19-year-old me, and I Harrison got a chance Ford. To sleep with 32-year-old Harrison Ford at that time.
I would do it.
100%. Okay, and the way it happened, okay, I'm ruining a little bit of the book here. But the way that it happened was, ooh, I've got the gossip on somebody who's not even around anymore. And it's in a book. So they were at a cast party, and Carrie had never drank before at this point.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
19 years old, she had never had a drink. And if she did, it was like wine, like a glass of wine or something in the presence of her family. And a bunch of the camera guys and like the scene guys and all this stuff were trying to get her to do a shot. And she's like, I don't really.
So she's this like young, hot 19-year-old.
Super fucking hot. So she's like, fine, just to get you guys off my back, I'll do this. So she did a shot, and it started going, and she did more and more shots, and she did this and this.
Oh, no.
Well, later, so these are a bunch of English guys, because they filmed it in England. So it's a bunch of English dudes, and she's like, I'm just carried away with the accent.
Okay, and that makes sense that she's drinking in England.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So she's getting wasted at this cast party thing, and then she hears an American accent. She's like, what's that? And she looks around, and Harrison Ford is bashing these dudes. She's like, he's like, get the fuck away from her. She is like a baby. You guys are being trash humans, and I know what your intentions are with her, and I don't fucking approve of this.
What?
Yeah. He swooped in like a motherfucking Indiana Jones.
Okay, so it Han didn't happen Solo. That night.
It did not, but he...
But she was like...
Well, you know
my
what?
My hero.
It kind of did happen that... night, but like later on when he so he took her in his limo and rolled down the windows because he was like, she's gonna fucking vomit all over. And while they're driving, like his driver is driving him back to his hotel so he could like watch her so she doesn't fucking die. And there's this car speeding up behind them, and they're like, what the fuck is going on? It ends up being Mark Hamill and the guy who plays Chewbacca. And they're like, roll down your window! But they didn't know that Carrie was in there with him.
That's hilarious.
So he's like, get down. Like, oh, no. I don't want them to see that you're in here and that you're drunk with me. It would
it's
be really
look bad.
So she's just laying on his lap like, oh, okay. So anyways, he talks to them and he's like, I'm just going back home to sleep. Fuck off. Go away.
Wait a minute. So did Harrison Ford swoop up and save her, or did he swoop up and take her for himself?
He actually really was being a very kind gentleman. He was taking... Mm-hmm. He actually was like, hey, I'm going to take you back to your hotel room. I will sleep on the couch. I will, you know, I'm going to be like, boop, boop, boop. So yeah, I don't know. That's the whole story. I don't really know. But she explains it a lot in The Princess Diarist, and it's a lot more romantic and cute. And then she's like, fuck, you're married, and she
unless older man who
she was like, we were away, it was like a few weeks where we were all alone and all we had was each other, and then she felt bad and don't
well,
worry about
I mean
it.
They almost have an actual like Leia and
oh my god, I know, when I read that I was just like, oh,
they have,
my
because
heart.
There was always love there between them, there was always just like it was for Leia and Han. Because they couldn't stay together.
Yes.
But they loved each other.
Yes.
Oh, like Desi and Lucy.
Yeah. So anyways, she was, yeah, like going back to her being super duper pure, she was extremely pure. So much to the fact that she never really smoked weed, didn't really get into drugs yet. Because her mom was who she was, very prim and proper and like...
Yeah, Debbie Reynolds, very.
Very much the 1950s type mom that you would expect. She said that the only drugs that she ever really did on the first film set was weed, and that weed was Han Solo's weed.
Of course it was Han Solo's. Harrison Ford's. Of course Harrison Ford had the weed.
Yes.
Wasn't he like a carpenter or something like that?
And yeah.
He was like... spotted, was like, that guy's fucking hot.
Like, whoa, look at that sweat that's just glittering off of, yeah. So, basically, Carrie Fisher, hottest person in the fucking 70s, female-wise, and then Harrison Ford, hottest dude. Like, come on. So, Star Wars came out, and she was immediately known all around the world. She got so famous, she was in advertisements, she had dolls made of her.
She had that amazing beach photo shoot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So great.
She, later on in the book, she says she goes into some store and some kid who's probably teenager, maybe early 20s, is like, boy, I thought about you every single day from the age of 12 till about last year. And he was like, sometimes more than once a day.
Ah!
And she at that point was like, I'm so fucking used to this that I don't, it phases me not at all. At this point.
I mean, like, yeah, because unfortunately,
she was
teenage masturbation.
Oh,
like,
my God. Still, to this day.
To this day.
That was actually fairly recently that she did this. This was when she was writing Wishful Drinking, and she was still going to Comic Cons and things. So she was signing autographs, and so she was, like, at a place, and this is happening.
Yeah, I'm sure nowadays, like, there's boys that are like,
yeah,
I found my sexual, there are women that are like, I found my sexual awakening when I was 12 years old, and you in that gold bikini.
So she actually, wasn't allowed to wear a bra during Star Wars because, so she was like, excuse me, Lucas Productions, why, George Lucas, am I not allowed to wear a bra in this white robe that you're making me wear? He says, there's no underwear in space. And she says, when I die, I want my obituary to read, she died bathing in the moonlight, strangled by her own bra. And guess what? That actually ran.
Yeah, I love that.
Fucking beautiful.
I love it. But no, that's so fucking ridiculous.
So they just wanted to see them titties bounce.
And they just wanted to fucking objectify a 19-year-old Carrie Fisher.
And they told her to lose weight, and she's like, but I'm very skinny. It's just I have chunky cheeks, and I can't lose any more weight because it's all on my face.
They wanted her to lose her face?
So that's why they made the
because they saw her face was too chubby. What the actual fuck?
And she's like, I'm not losing weight. So make my hair big as fuck.
Yeah.
So that's where that came from.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Because Carrie Fisher, super tiny.
So
I'm sorry, you hired a woman with a round face. You get a woman with a round face no matter. Yeah, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Obviously, it was fine because she continued on being fucking famous.
And she had to wear her hair down in like the second, third movie. Because go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Because I'm Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Go fuck yourself.
Oh, what? People are masturbating to your movie? Because of me? Fuck off. So
I guess I can wear my hair down.
Yeah.
Because my face is not too fat to masturbate to.
They are looking at this anyways. Okay, so in 1978, she got to host Saturday Night Live. This hosting gig actually did quite a lot for her because the musical guest was the Blues Brothers, which is John Belushi, the dead one. And Dan Aykroyd. Okay.
The dead one.
She was actually eventually cast in the Blues Brothers film. And a side note, too, about that movie. So at a cast party for that movie, the Blues Brothers, she ended up choking on a Brussels sprout, and Dan Aykroyd gave her the Heimlich and saved her life.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah.
I love that.
So around the same time, actually it was 1977 when this happened, Carrie met Paul Simon from Simon and Garfunkel while she was filming Star Wars.
Love, Paul Simon. Do you know that Mike and I's song is Call Me Out?
That is the weirdest song for a couple, but sure, that's beautiful. I also love Paul Simon. I myself am more of an Art Garfunkel, but
it's okay.
It's fine.
It's fine. No.
It's cool. So while she was filming Star Wars is when they met, they began dating. They dated from 77 to 83, but during a short break, however, she and Dan Aykroyd became engaged.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Wouldn't that have been weird?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Dan Aykroyd.
Mm-hmm. You know what, though? It's so funny because I think, Casey, my husband, is very much a Dan Aykroyd. Very into conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah.
Very funny, but kind of a straight man when he needs to be.
Yeah.
Listen, when I'm there to be funny, you got to be the straight man.
Well, and that, I mean, like, honestly, everyone needs the straight man.
And he's it, and I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
But when he's with other people, he's the funny one. And so whatever, I'm just funnier. So she obviously broke it off with Dan, and she married Paul Simon in 1983. They divorced in 1984.
That was her one marriage?
One marriage.
Was Paul Simon?
Paul Simon.
I did not know that she was married to Paul Simon.
And I put this in here. I love how she talks about her marriage and her relationship with him in the book Wishful Drinking. So they were still super great friends until the day she died.
She's so tiny.
She is too.
Is she really?
Mm-hmm. She's shorter than me.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So they were still super great friends up until the day she died. And there were actually several songs written about her. One was called Heart and Bones. Oh, it was good. She actually says in her book, if you can get Paul Simon to write a song about you, do it, because he is so brilliant at it.
Paul Simon writes some of my favorite songs.
The best songs.
Yeah.
The best songs.
Also, Call Me Out. No. I just imagine the day that Mike and I finally get married, and they're like...
What is the one
and
line?
Now the bride and the groom are going to have their first dance, and it's like...
So let me give you one of these lines here, because it's 1.5 wandering Jews, free to wander where they choose, are traveling together in the Sangre de Cristo, the blood of Christ mountains of New Mexico. So he's basically talking about 1.5 Jews. So he's the one Jew, and she's half Jewish.
That's so cute.
So free to wander wherever they choose, are traveling together. And it's just so beautiful. It is. It's really just beautiful. Mm. And then he had several songs about her. So they super duper loved each other. They just
could not
make it work. And it's better to find out than
not know.
You know? And so obviously from that point on until this next point, she made more Star Wars films.
Really? Just the first one?
There was more.
Really?
Yeah. You want to know something crazy?
What?
They're fucking still happening.
What?
I know. It's fucking crazy. You want to know something even crazier?
What?
She's been in them recently.
Right?
Not too recently, though. We'll get to that. If you don't already know that she's dead, then you guys are bad.
And spoiler alert. Was that 16?
Yeah. 16 was a fucking shit year for celebrity deaths.
It was also just a fucking shit year.
Yeah. David Bowie was the start, and Carrie Fisher was the end.
And it was a shit year.
They did not like aliens in that year. Clearly.
Clearly.
So fast forwarding a bit in her personal life, she meets Brian Lord in the early 1990s, and they begin dating. They had their daughter, Billy, in 1992, and they later separated because he was gay. Yeah. So she claims in the book Wishful Drinking that her mom knew all along. And she just never realized. She's just like, I'm just really bad with men. That's all.
And her mom's like,
no,
he's
sweetie.
Gay. He's
like,
gay.
I don't think he likes your south mouth.
Your south mouth? What? I've never heard that before.
That's what we call it in our house.
The south mouth. Oh, God.
It's what it is.
I mean, I totally understand the story behind it.
Yeah.
I just have never.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So then in 1990, just before Billy was born, her book Postcards from the Edge, which was my most recent book that I read of hers, I tried to read every single one of her books before this podcast.
Oh, my God. You've done so well. I feel a little intimidated by how many books of each person you read, because I'm always like, oh, I looked up their Wikipedia page, and I, like, watched a couple of documentaries.
Oh, wait until we get to the next one, because I've already read two books on the next one, if we're going with the actual theme. All right. If not, too bad, because I am. I fucking already did it. So her book, Postcards from the Edge, was released as a film, and it was starring Meryl Streep. This book is super-duper based on her life, even though she claims it was loosely based. Basically, in the book, it talks about a starlet that gets into drugs and has to go to rehab.
Okay. That sounds about right.
And she's very close to her mom.
Okay.
In the book.
That sounds about right.
And it's like, listen, lady, we all know that this book is about you. My next segment here, it says, now, anecdotes and shit. So these are just tidbits of things that I'm going to just spew out.
Okay. I'm listening. Okay.
Starting with, she isn't much on religion, but called herself an enthusiastically agnostic. She would be delighted in being shown that there is, in fact, a God.
Hmm.
She's like, I'm agnostic because I don't know, but if you show me something, I'll be fucking pumped about
it. I'm down.
Please, let me know.
I really would like to believe in something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want it, but until there is that, you know. Fisher was a staunch supporter of women's advocacy, animal rights, and LGBT causes, including AIDS research.
Because she is a great human being.
She's a fucking fantastic human being.
Yeah.
In 1985, after months of sobriety, she accidentally overdosed on a combination of prescription meds and sleeping pills.
Really? Because, you know, that happens to a lot of...
So many people.
Yeah. It's that's sad. That's mm-hmm. awful. And yeah. it's sad because...
So, but here's what came of her life, because she can't have a normal overdose. She got her stomach pumped and was later asked on a date by the guy who pumped it. He sent her a giant teddy bear.
Jesus Christ.
With a note saying, hey, I'm the dude that pumped your fucking stomach, basically.
And you're Carrie Fisher, and I'm going to use this as an in.
Yeah, she's like, no thanks. No thanks, pal.
No.
So she suffered from bipolar depression and self-medicated with cocaine and prescription pills for years. So because of her forwardness with her illness and addiction, she became an honorary board member for the International Bipolar Foundation.
That's amazing.
So she wasn't really an actual board member, but they were like, hey, you're a face for this.
Yeah, and you're vocal about it. You're vocal about your struggle, which is so important when it comes to mental health.
Yes.
Because people try to, like, hide mental health, and mm-hmm. they try to, like, push it away, which makes getting treated and diagnosed and mm-hmm. and not just, like, medicated, but also going to... counseling, it makes it harder because we tell people they need to hide.
Oh, yes.
Hide your depression. Hide your sadness. Hide your ups and downs.
That's not going to get you famous.
No. You need to...
Well, you know what, though? It's so funny because, again, in the book Wishful Drinking and in this book Shockaholic that she wrote, every book I've read of hers has been top-notch.
I didn't realize that she wrote as many books.
Oh, I'll tell you how many in a bit. But she... talks about how she got electroshock therapy.
Oh, I've heard about that. I knew that she got electroshock therapy.
It actually, she says it's inhumane as fuck, but it did help her remember things that she would have otherwise not remembered ever.
Like she, being shocked before?
Like, oh shit, I remember this! No, like just basic memories of her childhood that alcohol or cocaine had fucked up in her brain.
Oh, yeah.
And clouded. And she talked about, like, she lists people that she knows went to her shock clinic.
like other celebrities?
Uh-huh. Dick Cavett went there. There was, like, a ton. And so because of her anxiety and depression, she got an emotional support dog and named this French bulldog Gary.
Aww, which is your Gary? Dad's name. It is my dad's name. It is my father's name.
Whom she had until the day she died. Just so you know, Billy, her daughter... Now has Gary.
I bet you Gary misses Gary.
So Gary went to see the Star Wars after Gary, she died.
Gary.
Mm-hmm. So Billy took Gary to the Star Wars premiere, and when he saw Carrie up on the screen, he started to cry.
Of course he did.
I know.
I'm crying.
I know. I know. Isn't that fresh? And his tongue always sticks out.
I know. He's a goober looking dog.
I love
him.
He's
so cute. He's
broken. That dog's broken. She got a broken one.
Well,
she
wanted a broken
him.
Yeah. I mean, like.
She needed something to fit her personality.
Yeah.
You know?
And he's broken just because she's broken. And...
Perfect. Perfect. Perfect combination. So in the early 2000s, she had an awards show party. This is just like something I feel like if you didn't already know this, you're really going to enjoy this.
Okay. I'm ready for this.
Okay. So in the early 2000s, she had an award show party with just a couple of friends. One was a lesbian, one was a gay man, okay? She didn't have a ton of friends, so she's like, okay, there's my lesbian friend, there's my gay friend. I have one bed and one couch, so I can either sleep with the lesbian, and we know my history with people who are attracted to the opposite sex. I feel like I will have a time with this lady, and I'm not really into that right now.
You're like, I don't want to...
I'm getting older...
I don't want to do that to our friendship.
Yeah, like, maybe you should sleep on the couch, I'll sleep with the gay man. I've already done that before, and don't worry, he's not going for me. So this gay man was a Republican politician. This story just gets weirder and weirder.
Yeah, I mean, we're in this name, rabbit hole now.
His name was R. Greg Stevens. So we're going to call him Greg. So the next morning she wakes up, let's make breakfast. And guess what?
What?
Stevens is dead in her bed.
What? That is not at all what I expected to do.
I know.
What happened?
I can't tell you all that. It's a whole nother story for a whole nother time.
But no, you can tell us what happened. I mean, like, this is...
They're thinking it was a cocaine overdose and his heart exploded. Basically.
Oh, my.
But she's like, this is the last fucking time I have a gay man in my bed. Every time I do this, something happens. Once I got pregnant and once he died. I can't control what's happening here.
I cannot believe Carrie Fisher had someone die in her bed and I did not hear about it till right now.
Yeah.
That's insane.
100% insane.
Oh, my God. I love that woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing...
I put in here, I don't have time for it, but look into it. It's a wild ride.
Oh, I'm there for it.
It's a wild fucking ride.
I'm there for it. I gotta.
Oh, it's good. It's good. She has a whole chapter about it in Wishful Drinking. So in 2016, we're going to move right along from that.
Moving right along.
2016 was a big year for her. All around.
Why?
2016, she received the Harvard College Annual Outstanding Lifetime Achievement Award in Cultural Humanism. Then in 2016, she also got brought down pretty hard. So on December 23rd, Carrie was on a flight from London to L.A. For a press tour for the new Star Wars when she stopped breathing 15 minutes before landing in L.A.
She just stopped breathing.
Just stopped breathing.
And that was... I've cried.
Mm-hmm.
I cried when she died. Like,
Oh, yeah. Me too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a tough one.
It was so unexpected.
Yeah. So another passenger... ended up doing CPR on her until they safely landed. They took her then to a hospital and put her on a ventilator. She died just 4 days later on December 27th.
Yeah, that was a rough Christmas.
Yeah, it was a tough one.
Because it was just like the whole Christmas.
Well, and you know what's weird?
I keep refreshing my feed going, did Carrie Fisher live or did she die? Yep. Did she live or did she die? Yep. I like was watching that the whole time.
Well, in that same year, I think Harrison Ford got in a plane crash too.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure that was the
same
year.
I'm fairly certain.
We're like, why is death coming for Star Wars?
I know! Stop it, you guys!
They've actually rebooted the series in a way that it works. Yeah, stop trying to kill them off.
Stop it. Just stop it. So the cause was listed as cardiac arrest / deferred, which means we'll check into the rest of this later.
Did they check into the rest?
They did. Sleep apnea and buildup of the fatty tissue on the artery walls were the contributing factors. And I put here, I feel like she would have something snarky to say about that. Fatty tissue. Here you call them fat. Sadly, it later came out also that she did have trace amounts of cocaine, heroin, other opiates, and MDMA, which is basically ecstasy in her. Billy Lord, after her mother's passing, said she was purposefully open in all of her work about the social stigma surrounding these diseases, meaning drugs and depression.
Mm-hmm.
I know my mom, and she would want her death to encourage people to open up about their struggles.
I mean, completely. She would have been like, hey guys, I fucking killed myself.
Yeah.
You wanna talk about this? Because we should probably
open up about my anxiety, my depression, and my
bipolarism, and I self-medicated, and is a very, it's so easy to get your hands on that stuff, and it's so easy to fall back in the habit, and it's really hard to not be around it.
Yeah. So Mark Hamill at an awards show said, I was bowled over by her humor and her wit, how sardonic she was, how dark she was. Within 20 minutes, she was telling me personal stories about her mother and father that I wouldn't have shared with you if I'd known you for 10 years. So, like, they were best buddies.
Yeah.
You know? They were, like, about the same age. And
you know what reminds me? It reminds me of the relationship that, like, if you're putting it in a modern-day perspective, it would be, like, Jennifer Lawrence and her co-stars from...
Hunger Games?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
I guess
like,
you could say that.
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they treat him like the little brother, and like it's very much that. I think.
Yeah. Okay.
Because I can also see Jennifer Lawrence as a very Carrie Fisher type.
Yeah.
Who's just like
kind of silly.
She's kind of silly, and she's kind of open about the fact that she's like a fucking mess.
Yeah.
She's always like, I fucking fell down.
Yeah.
More than once.
Yeah.
That she actually had Hannah Montana tell her to get her shit together once.
Ouch.
Yeah, that's a rough one. But no, you have the Goober, which is the Mark Fisher.
Right.
Or the
Mark Hamill.
And then you have, like, the super handsome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So just one day after Carrie's death, while her brother Todd and her mother Debbie were planning her funeral, Debbie shouts from the kitchen, I want to be with my Carrie, and promptly has a stroke and falls over and dies in the kitchen. First of all, poor fucking Todd. Can we just give him a fucking break, you guys?
Right. Todd's like, Mom, I just lost my... but no, I mean, like, they were super close. And that is the most beautiful
love story ever. I want to be with my Carrie.
Yeah. I want to be with my Carrie. They were best friends.
Best friends.
And she was, like, she was definitely a mother that was like, I should have never outlived my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm crying again.
God, this is a really emotional episode.
Well, I mean, like, these are two people that bring a lot of emotion out in me.
Yeah.
Well, these are very, very...
They're powerful women.
They are super powerful women. They're women that, for different reasons, I look up to extremely.
Yeah, for sure.
And then, like, just the whole story between Carrie and her mother.
I know. Which is another documentary you should watch. It's called Bright Lights. It's also on HBO. It's about their entire life together. So I'm going to finish this up real quick.
Go ahead.
Carrie and Debbie were buried together at Forest Lawn Memorial Park in Hollywood Hills. There was a beautiful statue placed on top of their cremains. I'll post pictures.
I'm going to go see it one day, by the way.
Oh, my God.
You want to come with me?
So she was cremated, however, and in true Carrie fashion, she had her ashes, some of them, not all of them, because some of them were with her mother. She had her ashes put into a large plastic Prozac pill and gave her poor baby brother this honor to carry her around her own funeral. She put it in her will to be carried around in a giant Prozac pill at her own funeral.
I love her so much.
I know. She's so great. Anyways.
I want to go out like Carrie Fisher. Like, I don't want to be cremated, but I do want to make it super fucking obnoxious.
Yeah, she's like, hey, Todd, listen, you're probably going to outlive me, and Mom probably won't do this, but carry me around.
At a Prozac,
in a Prozac pill. At my own funeral.
She was present.
At her own funeral.
I just want the end of the story to be, and then they shot that Prozac pill into space.
Sadly, it is not that. But it's still pretty good. So on January 6th, the lights of Broadway in New York City turned off completely for one full minute in honor of Carrie and Debbie.
That's really beautiful.
Isn't that beautiful?
It's so beautiful.
So here are some of her accolades. She won Wild Wit of the Year Award for the Gay and Lesbian Entertainment Critics Association in 2017. She won a Grammy in 2018 for Best Spoken Word Album for The Princess Diarist. And also in 2018, she won a Teen Choice Award for Choice Fantasy Movie Actress. She has been nominated a whopping 17 times for various things, however. 17 times, and those are the awards she won.
Mm-hmm. That's sad.
Sad. She has written 8 books. I've read all of them.
They're so good.
Checked them all off my list. She's been in 46 films and written 3 screenplays and 3 plays.
She's a badass.
She is my woman of sci-fi.
She's so good. Like, I'm very happy with both of our women. They are two of my role models. They're two of the people that I look up to.
Yeah.
Two of the people that I really, for different reasons.
Yeah. Speaking of women that you look up to...
So I have a woman that I look up to, and I've actually told her that I'm going to do her for this episode because she is the Lucille Ball of burlesque here in Columbus. And I've actually warned her. I'm like, I'm going to do this about you because you are the Ohio
Is it Columbus. Me? I'm just kidding.
Girl, you too brash. It's Eileen Gavin.
Oh, my God. I love her.
I love her so much. And she is. She is the Lucille Ball of
Columbus
Burlesque.
Oh, she is. She is.
The woman is fierce and beautiful and fiery. And
literally thousands of miles of leg.
Oh, my God. Space. So much leg. So the first year we did amateur left, we didn't ask anyone to mentor. I didn't have the foresight. I was like, oh, yeah, I can totally take an entire crowd of people under my fucking wing. And
to be fair, though, they were all great.
They were all amazing. No. Eric Tate actually said these are better than most of the burlesque performers I've ever seen in my life. But Eileen, without even asking, took Lola Banana under her wing.
That makes so much sense.
Right?
Holy shit.
So she takes Lola Banana under her wing, you know, teaches her to be funny and coy and fun.
Right.
And she does it without even, like, they're not even part of the show. I don't even know. No, they didn't even perform the first year. Mm-hmm. She went and watched it, and she was super impressed with the whole show, but she didn't even perform. She donated her time, and Athena did that as well. They are my 2-3-year mentors, because I was like, you're an honorary mentor from the first year on.
And Athena was my lady of the first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Eileen is walking around amateur-esque, and she is just in her pasties and her C-string and dripping in diamonds, and she's like, I'm going to go get a cocktail at the bar, like in a merkin, and just walks up. But I, like, look at her, and I'm like, you look like a black and white picture from the 1920s, yes, where you're just like...
Her makeup is always so pristine.
And she's got the perfect bow lip. Oh, my God, it's so
good. Her lips and legs.
Oh, my God. But beyond her, like, complete and utter stunning beauty.
Yes.
Because she is legit, like, jaw-dropping.
She is.
Stunning.
So is mine. We have such
beautiful friends.
God.
But beyond her beauty, she is intelligent. Mm-hmm. She is a passionate person. She is the most loving person. And she has a fucking black belt. She does karate. All the fucking time. She could kick your ass.
She knows origami, too.
She does origami, too. But she could kick your ass.
Intricate origami.
In a moment.
Eileen, I didn't know this about you. Eileen!
Have you ever seen her do her, like, wucha! And, like, her leg is, like, 10 times in the air because, God damn it, it's, like, 30 feet of length.
Her legs are my height.
Oh, my. Or, like, her legs are forever long.
Isn't she, like, a linguist or something?
No, she's not a linguist. I don't believe. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, Eileen.
Eileen.
She's so multifaceted,
she has so, like, many things that she probably is.
And then
she probably is.
I got to go to her house for something, and I forget what it was, but it was just a gorgeous 1950s house, and I was just like, I'm just going to vicariously live through every piece of you. But she's a badass.
Yeah,
and
she is.
She's hilarious. She is beautiful, and she's hilarious, which is why I chose her for my Lucille Ball, because she encompasses that. Like, when you see her on stage, she can be the most gorgeous thing that you've ever seen in your entire fucking life. Mm-hmm. While also being
hilarious.
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 And not just like, you know, like, oh, my number's funny because the song is funny and I'm being funny
her
with the
facial
funny
expressions.
She is
like everything.
She's physical comedy. Yes, she has her perfect timing down. Her facial expressions are down. Like, she is what Lucille Ball was to physical comedy in A Beautiful Woman.
Yes.
And it's, you can encompass both. You don't have to be ugly and funny or beautiful and stupid.
Right. Wow, what a perfect person you have. Such a good job.
Like, that was tying, like, a really my people good together.
Yeah.
But, and, like, I had to, you know what? The first person I thought of when I was like, I'm doing Lucille Ball, what woman should I do, was Eileen Gavin. So
my woman is my dear friend Bridget. She and I only just met fairly recently. She and my husband went to school with my husband. elementary school all the way through high school. And she was, like, the older girl. She was, like, the artsy girl that everybody had a crush on. But she was super cool to everybody, including the nerds. Like, my husband and her eventual husband were fucking nerds.
Oh.
And she was like, but you guys are cute, you know, and I'll hang out with you. But then, you know, high school went and whatever, and she went to college. She went to Bowling Green to study art, fine art.
Okay.
And she eventually met up with these crazy boys again, and that's how I eventually met her, was I got married to my husband, and they are still in contact, and I finally got to meet her.
Yeah.
Just a couple years ago, really. I met her husband long before I met her.
By the way, Bridget is probably one of my top favorite
You want to know their daughter's name? Greta.
Fuck no. That's so cute.
I know.
That's super cute.
I know.
I know. Like, Bridget is one of my favorite lady names.
Yeah. Bridget and Greta.
Shut up.
I know. I know.
Like an entire spread of black and white pictures together.
Like, they're the cutest. They are the fucking cutest. So Bridget is an artist, and she is like the epitome of like stay at home artist mom that I aspire
would love to be one day.
Oh God, she's so cool. She's so cool. She's also one of those people who she is a mom, but she is playing music and she is doing art and she is. Okay, so she paints circles. Her thing is circles. And so she does all kinds of circles all over. She has this painting down in her basement that looks like a black hole. Like, if you stare at that, you will be transported into some space. I don't know what space, but some space. And she's just always been beautiful and charming, and she's so funny, and she looks right into your eyes when she talks to you.
Like,
she will not
break
contact. Yeah.
And a person.
Yeah.
I really do. I'm an eye starer. I do try to stare.
I also do that as well. So I'm going to show you quickly just one of her circle paintings, because they're like my, well, first of all, here's her. She's so cute. She's so cute. But she does these circle paintings, and I own one, and she called it David Bowie because she knows how much I love him. And it's hanging on my wall, and it's gorgeous, and I'll put it on my Facebook or Instagram because I'm going to promote her art as well as Eileen's. So she and I and her husband and my husband and various other friends that they went to high school with are in a little side band right now. We don't have a name or anything, but every time we go up to their place,
it's fun.
We drink and we play music, and it is just great. And she has an amazing taste in music. It's so good. And she's real into the 70s like I am, so I really dig it. And the last time I saw her, she was wearing a Star Wars shirt, and I was like,
you are my
You're my person. You're my person.
She gave you this sign.
She's like, hey, can you talk about me on your podcast? But she... Beautiful woman, and
she's adorable,
Bridget.
By the way. She looks like she's very, like,
she's taller than me, but she is tiny little. And Greta looks like Mary Tyler Moore. Ask Casey.
That's adorable.
She does. Their daughter looks exactly like Mary Tyler Moore.
Love it.
It's insane. And I didn't notice it, but Casey's like, Greta looks like Mary Tyler Moore, and said this when she was, like, six. And then, like, yeah, and she hasn't stopped. So that's my lady. My two ladies, I guess. I talked about Greta as well.
Yeah, she gets into Greta.
Greta's going to eventually be cool like her mom.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot
not that
wait.
Her dad's not cool. Adam, you're fine, but...
Wink.
But Bridget's super cool.
So, anyways, again, thank you for listening. We're glad that you're out there. And if you have women that you... are in awe of, whether it be someone that you know through history or someone that you know in your everyday life, please send them to us, because we want to put their stories out there and we want to raise each other up.
Yes.
That's what, I mean, like, this, that's what this podcast is all about, is raising each other up.
You know, that actually reminds me kind of to bring up what we are planning on doing eventually here in the future.
Ding, ding, ding.
So we are going to do 6 full episodes such as this. Did we agree on 6 or 7? Lucky number 7.
I thought we said like 9. I have no clue.
We're going to surprise you with this information.
We'll surprise ourselves with whatever.
So we are going to record an unnamed amount of full-length episodes. We're going to keep these full-length episodes going. However, we are going to start including in a few months shorter episodes that we want your help with.
Yeah, because you're going to go to 9. April. That's your birthday.
Okay.
But yes, we want to do some shorter episodes before while we're getting ready for the next season.
Yes.
And we want your help with that. So during the summer, we want to talk about women that you
guys... inspire you.
Are inspired by it. So
so send us, hell, if it's you, if you inspire
you're
you.
You're like, I'm a badass woman, talk about me.
Send us your information, and we will gladly read those on the air. But our email is revolutionrosies@gmail.com.
You can hit us up on Facebook at revolutionrosies.
Same with Instagram, revolutionrosies. And now on Twitter, at revolutionrosies with a Y-S, not an I-E-S, at the end.
Because Twitter's weird.
Twitter's weird.
You can actually find us on spikeandbetty.com, or if you go to revolutionrosies.com, it'll lead you to spikeandbetty.com.
Damn straight!
I'm trying to figure out how to make
redirect the page
directly to the podcast, but you'll end up at spikeandbetty.com, which is much more helpful because we're still learning stuff.
So please, 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 please. Oh, and actually coming up in November... Our next month episode, we're actually going to have like two, and one is a crossover episode.
Yeah, we're doing a crossover episode in November. I'm so excited.
Yes, it's going to be so much fun. We're going, I don't know if it's going to be released in November, but we're definitely recording it in November, and it's going to be with Sounds of Bustown, which is a Columbus-based music podcast done by William Mount, and we are going to be guests on his podcast talking about, hopefully, some badass musical women.
I'm so excited about this. Yes. Like, I'm so excited about this.
So we're going a little bit off of our 50s, 60s, and 70s, but it's going to be...
still some badass women. You should still check it out. Also, you should just check out...
Sounds of Bustown.
Sounds of Bustown.
Easily. Yeah. Just subscribe to Sounds of Bustown as well. William would totally enjoy that. He's been a very big supporter of us, so we definitely need to support him as well.
Also, thank you to all of our supporters. We've had so much support. It has blown my mind. Our first episode, our pilot episode, was listened throughout the United States.
And Canada.
We made it international. Our first episode.
We had somebody, in one person in Canada, and whoever you are, if you're still listening,
Please tell your friends. Thank you.
Tell your friends. That was the coolest thing to see that.
Oh, it was exciting. And I mean, like, we got all the way to California, so we went coast to coast.
Yes.
I'm so very happy. You guys are all badass women.
Yes.
And I hope that you continue to listen to and support other women around you. And I mean, that's what this podcast is about.
100%.
It's 100% about
you and love and building each other up.
It's that women are badasses.
Women are badasses.
Keep that in mind while you smear lipstick.
And raise hell.
Bye.
Bye.